We're on to the first agenda item of this morning, which is a groundfish committee report, tab 3. A couple items to discuss. Turn it over to committee chair, Rip Cunningham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, the documents are under tab number 3. The items for today's discussion are the document number 3, which is the permit bank amendment, and essentially document number 11, which was the groundfish committee meeting report from last week. The committee discussed this at length and did come up with a motion that I will get to in a moment. Essentially, what is happening with Amendment 17 is that it would authorize state permit banks. It is being put forth, obviously, as an amendment under a categorical exclusion, and most of the work on putting together the documentation for that had been done by the service. I don't know if the Mike is here and is willing to answer any of the questions on it. The first several pages of the amendment state the problem and why it is that this amendment is being proposed. I think there will also be a motion made today. There has been some concern from members of the public and the industry that people wanted to see some economic analysis that would not normally be done when moving this through with a categorical exclusion. And the intention is that that would go on a separate track, essentially at the same time as the amendment is being crafted, put out for public comment. I think that one of the issues that we probably will discuss about that today, and my discussion with staff that we do need to be upfront with, is from a resource standpoint from the council, it is going to require shifting effort off of something else in order to get that economic analysis done, and there is a likelihood that it cannot be done immediately. So it may not be available for public comment at the same time as Amendment 17 would be out for public comment. So I wanted to make people aware of that. I don't know if anyone on the committee has questions concerning Amendment 17. I would direct them to Mike if you do, or Mr. Chairman, if you think that we should just put the motion out first and then see where that leads us.
Let's get the motion on the board and then we can entertain questions.
Okay. On behalf of the committee, I move that the council approve Amendment 17 for public review. That carried the committee 11 in favor, one abstention.
Discussion, questions, comments? Terry.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This document, Amendment 17, is a project that the states and the service have been working on for, I don't know, better part of 3 years. As you all know, we've brought before you MOA and as it was being developed, when it was developed, the initial draft of this amendment. And this amendment, from my perspective, is really just an administrative process to move forward the state permit banks. It's a little confusing in the draft because the substance of the MOA is in there. And at last week's committee meeting, we had a significant discussion about the MOA and the terms and conditions. There's been subsequent correspondence about the efficacy of state permit banks and what impact it will have on fleet diversity, what impacts it will have on the price of permits and about the whole cat share program in general. So I do have another motion to address that following this, but I'm hopeful that the council will support sending this out for public review, and we can move this this process along, help out some of the smaller boats and smaller communities that are really reaching out for help. There are folks I see in the audience here who will be the direct beneficiaries of it, and I think if it's appropriate, Mr. Chairman, they will speak on behalf of it. So,
anyone else on the council? Dr. Pierce.
We appreciate all of the assistance that was provided by the National Marine Fisheries Service to develop this amendment for the council. As indicated in the amendment itself, specifically in Chapter 2, it doesn't propose to establish any NOAA-sponsored state-operated permit banks. They exist already. It doesn't authorize any NOAA-sponsored state-operated permit banks because they have been authorized already. It just focuses very narrowly, as it says, on alternatives that relate to administrative procedures and requirements that would enable us to operate in a way that would make us far more efficient than we otherwise would be. As it stands right now, we're considered to be sectors, and that really is not an appropriate definition, and it imposes restrictions that are definitely inappropriate and just not necessary. So, through the good work of our staff, my staff working with Mike Petney, and of course staffs from the other states involved, a very good document has been prepared, and we hope that the council sees fit to support this motion.
Doug.
I guess I have to put my two cents with here. This is a very important part of this document. Is very important in helping us get our permit bank off the ground here, and our entire fishery here is dependent on some of the assistance, because we're all, just about all of us are, all the vessels in New Hampshire are under the. Are considered small boat in a rural area. So whatever assistance the council can provide with us, I'd greatly appreciate, and I support this motion.
It's like the herring discussion. I got Terry and Dave and Doug leading the way. Anything further from the council before I go to the audience? Anyone in the audience? Maggie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine. Excuse my voice. I want to make it, you have our letter from our attorneys on this issue, and I'm not going to read that. I want to make it clear that Associated Fisheries of Maine supports state permit banks. We support this amendment to allow them to operate in a more efficient way. However, we do not think that it is possible to sever the stipulations of the MOU from this amendment, and that an analysis of those particular stipulations is necessary. is a good and prudent thing to do, is required by law to be done. I was at a recent meeting where I asked the NIMS representative how the NIMS had decided that they would stipulate that the permit bank opportunities could be provided only to boats under 45 feet. And the response, some of you were at that meeting, the response was that there was a natural break, and they looked at the number of permits by vessel class, and there was a natural break, and there was the majority of groundfish permits were in that permit class. And I thought, what if they had looked at that same information and said, holy cow, we don't have any boats left over 85 feet. We better do something to protect them. This council would have, well, I won't speak for you, but I can imagine what your response would have been to that. You would have demanded an analysis of that. You would have wanted to see why it was necessary to protect those certain boats. So that's, again, you know, if there is a need in that vessel class for protection, then we should document that. We should show that we are, that these permit banks are providing that protection. But without some analysis, there is no documentation that that need is being met. So we would urge you to do the necessary analysis to show what the impact is of the decision-making that's gone into the MOUs. There's also a potential for a great impact on, you know, the market. We've seen already, we have a right of first refusal on a permit that the state of Maine has a contract on, and it's not good. It's not good that what that permit price is being offered, you know, being asked for by this person who made a proposal to the state is way out of line with the market value. So those issues need to be addressed, and they need to be brought out, and we hope that the council will agree that that needs to be done. Thank you.
Anyone else? Aaron?
Good morning. Aaron Doherty, Penobscot East Resource Center in the Northeast Coastal Community Sector. There was a point, actually, from Maggie that I wanted to reiterate. I do think that it's important that we keep a close eye on how money is spent, and that's something that's going to be very important for the future of state-sponsored permit banks in general. I do, however, want to point out the importance and the validity of state permit banks, and this Amendment 17 is something that we support because it helps to enable the state permit banks to operate. So I just want to point out the landings year-to-date between 2009 and 2010. For boats that are under 50 feet, less than or equal to 50 feet, it's not exactly 45, but it's the closest proxy that we have, I think. The landings are down 41%. This is across the fleet. The revenue is down 23%. If you look at the other side of the picture, boats that are over 50 feet, the landings are up 8%. The revenue is up 29%. Now, this isn't a perfect example, but I think that it's a very good demonstration of the need that is in the fleet today that I think the permit banks are going to help provide for. If you look at Maine as well, the picture is pretty similar. The landings are down 51%, and the revenue is down 32%. So I have to say, the fishermen that I've been talking to and the fishermen that are in my sector right now are pretty excited about the promise that the state permit bank holds. And we also have some membership in Massachusetts. So they've looked at Maine as the leader right now, and they say, so when is Massachusetts going to get this? And I know that I've explained to them that Massachusetts has also received $1 million, and I think that will be moving along shortly. But as an example for how to protect a small boat fleet, I think this is a great way to move forward. until we have some fleet diversity measures in place, I think this is the best fleet diversity protection that we could have at this point. Thank you.
Ted.
I'm kind of a newcomer to the groundfish forum. I had a permit with Days at Sea and was allocated next to nothing. So I'm working my way back into the fishery, and I actually went with a group of Rhode Island fishermen from Sector 5, which I ended up sitting out because being among fishermen with such a small allocation, there's no point in being a sector and being burdened by all the problems associated with the first year running sectors. We went and we spoke to the Economic Development Corporation in Rhode Island and supported the idea of a permit bank initially. I now look at these permit banks and see them as the great threat that's going to keep someone like me from getting back into the groundfish fishery that I once had a permit of value for. This isn't like a housing market where people buy and sell. This is a drying market. People buy and hold. And if you dump all this money into the market, small fishermen are going to get priced out immediately, you know, in year one. This may be a good idea in year four or five, but to do this out of the gate, what you are essentially doing is creating the entity we all feared at the outset of this process. You're creating the corporate giant that's going to crush the small fishermen. And you need to do analysis and look at this. And you don't need a degree in economic theory to figure out that if all this money comes in to a market with a limited supply of permits, price is going to go through the roof. I talked with a friend from Maine, who's a monk fisherman, and his permit that he thought might have been worth about $100,000 at best last year, he's now thinking he can get $200,000 to $250,000 because of the money that's pouring in. And you have banks spending, as the government invariably does, they're spending other people's money. They spend it lavishly. You need to analyze this, you need to look at this, and we need to slow down because I think what's going to end up happening is that the government, in its attempts to help small fishermen, is going to kill small fishermen who are trying to fight their way up back on top and survive. And if you treat this as an administrative measure and you rush it through, you're going to do what the government always does. You're going to kill the people you're trying to help. And that's what I see happening. And I think you need to take a look at this. Because for me, as a guy who's putting my money aside to buy groundfish permits and get back in the game, these permit banks, they're the Grim Reaper. I can't compete with that kind of money. And you've taken a good idea, and by injecting it into the market in the first year, you've created a very destructive process, very destructive to the very people you're trying to help. And I think you need to slow down and take a look at this. Because to me, I thought I was making good moves and getting right back in the game. And I'm here as a monk fisherman and a skate fisherman at the groundfish part of this council meeting to tell you, you're killing me. You're taking me right out of the game with these banks. And you're not helping the small fishermen. And moving fast without review is the worst thing you can do. Thank you.
Peter.
Peter Shelley, Conservation Law Foundation. We do support this motion, although I would I won't restate but would underline the concerns just raised at the mic. It is very critical that someone do the analysis to understand who the beneficiaries of this program are and that, in fact, the states do design it, perhaps in their own unique ways, to benefit the smaller boat fleet, which by all evidence that we're able to look at is a group that needs transitional help, particularly at this time. I would also point out, however, that Amendment 17 was also identified as the amendment previously that would be used to look at fleet diversity, look at protecting the different segments of the fleet, whether it's the big boat segment or the small boat segment, that would in fact tackle this very difficult problem the point system, a lot of other idea, area-based management, a lot of other important ideas that have been advanced to this council and that are probably some of the most difficult issues you will have to tackle, have been put off to future amendments. Amendment 17, I think for good reasons now, is looking at a much more surgical change, and I would not saddle it with all these other issues. But we strongly urge you to create the amendment that will look at these other programs and the data. The data is very hard for the public to look at. We look at it at such aggregated levels, it's virtually impossible to know what the truth is in terms of the impact of your management decisions. But you have access to that data, and the service has access to that data, and it's really critical that it be brought forward so that we get some truth and some data actually driving some of the future management actions, and we do protect all segments of the fleet and allow them all to benefit from the restoration and recovery of the groundfish stocks. Thank you.
Good morning. Robert Odlin from Scarborough, Maine. I am a owner-operator of a small fishing vessel, happens to be a 44-foot vessel, and I would be one of the beneficiaries of a permit bank. I was under the impression we're going to talk about fleet diversity. Maybe I'm a little early in speaking. we definitely need a mechanism to allow fleet diversity, and I think we had that with Days at Sea and the baseline criteria. Only you guys are all aware of the baseline criteria. Small boats could lease from smaller boats or larger, but the larger boats could not lease from smaller boats. By relaxing the baseline criteria parameters, you created a large boat grab up of all the small boat permits quota. That, I believe, is what jacked the price up. The fellow who spoke to two people before me mentioned that now the state permit banks have government money and they can afford to pay $7 a pound, for instance, for a permit that prior to that didn't have as high a value. I am going to hopefully benefit from Maine's permit bank this May. I desperately need it. Prior to Amendment 16, I caught 300,000 or 400,000 of groundfish. This last year, I was in the common pool, currently in the common pool, and my catch was drastically reduced for a number of reasons, mostly being two-for-one counting and then the elimination of cod and hake down to 100 pounds apiece. But I guess I'm in favor of your Amendment 17 to allow the Maine permit banks, but I think the real issue that I have to take notice is that the baseline criteria was eliminated during Amendment 16, and if you would be somehow way to go back and look at that baseline criteria, that's your fleet diversity tool right there. Right now, because of Amendment 16, 20-foot skiffs can lease their quota to 100-foot draggers, and the more larger vessel that is better financed is always going to be able to pay more than a 44-foot boat and under. I appreciate you guys letting me talk. I appreciate all the work you guys do as council members. I'm on a state council myself, and it can be an arduous task, and I guess you guys were here up till late last night. If we do talk about fleet diversity later on this morning, I'd like to have a chance to talk again. Thank you.
Mark.
Mark Stettner, Hanger Fisherman. I asked some council members, would Hanger Fishermen have access to these fish? And the answer is, yeah, if you join a sector. And as you know, the cost to join a sector, I don't know, 15, 20 grand, then you got to worry about getting quota and all that. I want to ask that in the future amendments that at some point the rules are changed where when a kid graduates high school and wants to make a few bucks, that he can go out in a 16, 17-foot boat, minimal costs, have access to this fish, and get himself into the fishery business if he chooses. These are the smallest boats. I started with a 17-foot boat, and it would be almost impossible for a kid in high school, and then we're talking the future here. I mean, we all don't live forever. Think 10, 15, 20 years down the road where you want this fishery to be, because in my organization, now down to four, we had about 25 people now, and there's only four guys left that I work with. And, I have my mixed feelings about this. I realize that the train left the station on it, and you have to be in a sector to have access to this. But down the road, ask the question, can a kid in high school go out and buy a 16, 17-foot skiff and be able to fish and have access to these fish? Because the way it's looking now, that we hear fleet diversity, and fleet diversity shouldn't mean boats between 44 and 45 feet. It seems that's the path that we're going, is there is no fleet diversity, and if even the smallest boats don't have access to this, we got a bit of an issue. So I have mixed feelings. I'm hopeful in the future that small boats and kids in high school that decide to be commercial fishermen will have at some point access to this fish without having to cough up $50,000 to do it. Thank you.
Brett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brett Tolley, the Northwest Atlantic Marine Alliance, and I just wanted to take a minute and read an excerpt from a testimony letter from someone who couldn't make it here today. It's Carolyn Eastman. Carolyn and her husband own a small fishing business as well as a seafood market in Seabrook, New Hampshire. And this is just an excerpt from Carolyn's letter, and we'll submit it formally afterwards as well. So part of the letter says, we have $1 million to put towards a permit bank, but that may only be enough to buy one good permit for the entire state. We need more than that. Most of us are less than 50 feet in length. If nothing changes, you will see an entire state be consolidated out of the New England groundfish fishery. This is not fleet diversity. The council prioritized an amendment to address fleet diversity. I urge you to continue working on this amendment and not delay. We know the problem. Let's work on the solutions. So I just wanted to read that. I think it's relevant to the discussion. And I also wanted to add that I think that this is all part of that same larger picture about how do we address fleet diversity. Does this accomplish that goal? Will this do it? I think there's a lot of skepticism, and I think it comes down to whether it's done right. It all depends on how the permit banks are operating, how they're setting their prices. If the prices are done wrong, it could potentially stand to displace some of the small scale as well. If it's done right, it could be one of the best tools to help move the fleet towards a more diverse fleet. And I think I just want to leave the council with this one thought. I think it comes back to the need to answer the question, what does fleet diversity mean, and what kind of fleet does the council want to see in the future? Thank you.
Anyone else to the motion on the board? Back to the council. Pat.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Or the state permit banks don't create fishing opportunities for small vessels. What they're designed to do is try to preserve some fishing opportunity for small vessels. Permit banks exist now. They are authorized essentially under the current regulations, and there are operating permit banks. The only thing this amendment does is allow the state-operated permit banks, which are a different animal, to operate more efficiently. But they could operate anyway under the existing regulations. There's just some regulatory constraints that prevent them from working the way they're intended to work. And so that's all this amendment does, is try to address those regulatory constraints. I think the whole issue of permit banks and accumulation limits and diversity is a separate question, and we ought to take that question in its entirety through the process the council has already initiated. And I would encourage that process to move forward as quickly as possible. This one, from my perspective, all it does is make some changes to the regulations to allow this to happen a little more easily than it would happen otherwise.
Anyone else on the council? Jimmy?
Well, I just want to ask, I don't know who, probably Gene, it's been raised as a question about whether this particular amendment should have an EIS. And we have a letter in there with a lot of legal stuff, which, to be honest with you, I haven't really studied this. But I just want to raise that question. I mean, are we comfortable? Has a determination been made that this amendment is okay to go forward without an EIS?
Yes, that determination was made when this was drafted. This is still your amendment. If you want further analysis, you can request it. And I'm not suggesting that you shouldn't. And it could be under NEPA or it could be under Madison Act provisions to address some of the concerns, or at least look at some of the concerns that have been raised. I think in light of all the comments, the agency should take them into account and assessing what kind of analysis is actually needed for this, to the extent that it's still assigned to the agency to complete the analysis for. But I want you to, the council to know that you're free to ask for any additional analysis if it's possible that you want, because it is ultimately the council's action.
I guess, Tom, you're working on this, to the chair, I guess. Could we find out how much delay it would cause this amendment? And if we ask for an EIS or a NEPA analysis, and if there's a delay, is it a practical delay? In other words, would it delay the permit banks that haven't been really got going not to be able to operate in the fall? I think they're targeting operating in 2012. So if we requested that analysis, would it delay the start time of the permit banks?
Rip?
I think the answer is yes. It was also in the discussion that I had prior to today's meeting, was that if we simply said we want an EA with this, the EA could come out with exactly the same wording as to what is currently there. That's why I brought up, I think there will be a request for economic analysis, but the concept there was it would be a separate but parallel track for doing that. And if that's what, if people aren't comfortable with that, then the decision has to be made about the delaying aspect of it.
Dave Gale.
I think what you're hearing from the audience is the huge amount of frustration that dates back to the allocative effects of Amendment 16. While I am certainly sympathetic to a lot of the arguments, I'm not sure they really have much to do with Amendment 17. I think what they really have to do with is our what we're going to discuss a little later, which is looking at these allocative effects. And, you know, if you do an analysis right now, you're only halfway, a little more than halfway through the year, I guess. It's pretty hard to tell exactly what those effects are. And this is what we discussed at the Groundfish Committee at the last meeting. You know, as much as I hate to wait, I think you have to wait for at least a year and see what the total picture is for the year before you can do any kind of economic and social analysis at all. So, I mean, my recommendation would be you let this go forward as it is, and with a clear understanding that this council is going to take a look at the allocative effects of Amendment 16. And that's you know, next on the list of topics for discussion here. But I mean, I think even if we get an analysis right now of Amendment 17 and its effects, it's not going to tell us much. Because it really can't.
Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Following the disposition of this in our vote, I do have a motion requesting a socioeconomic analysis. I'm not sure, I think as Dave Gaethel was just mentioning, if we request an analysis of an administrative action, what we're going to get out of it. I don't think we'll get the information we're looking for. It will slow things down, not necessarily for Maine, because we're going to be operational this May anyhow, but for the other three states. This amendment is as Pat said, is just focused on the administrative implementation of something that currently exists. And in our ops plan, we applied for a slug of exemptions, and we received all of them with the exception of the Rule of Three, and we adapted to that. So selfishly, from my perspective, we're okay this year. Slowing things down won't impact us, and I certainly don't want to imperil the long-term success of this program, but I do fundamentally think we need this socioeconomic analysis. Not only for the full transparency, but to address the other issues that we're going to be talking about later this afternoon.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As has been stated before, the basic reason for this was to allow a state not to have to join the sector and be able to have a permit bank, and quite frankly, some members of our Attorney General's office has some concern about whether a state can actually join a permit bank. And without this, that could put us in a very difficult position. So that's why we're looking for this option amendment to go forward, so that we do have the administrative ability to have our own state permit bank without being part of a sector.
Jenny?
Yeah, I'm in favor of this motion, and I don't want my comments to be construed that I'm not. I just wanted to ask the questions about the analysis, that's all. So I just want to put that on the record.
Anyone who hasn't had a word? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Thirteen opposed. Abstentions. One abstention. Motion carries 13-0. One abstention. Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That concludes what we had on the agenda for the permit bank. Terry?
Almost. I take very seriously the request for analysis, and there's a well-written letter that came. There were a number of comments from staff and committee members and subsequent communications over this last week, and so I'm going to make a motion to direct the staff to prepare a socioeconomic analysis of state permit bank impacts on groundfish catch share programs.
Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Libby. Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, this motion is a bit of a surprise to me, and a bit of a disappointment. I think if this motion passes, it will delay the adoption of this amendment and slow up implementation in a rather significant way. The Massachusetts and New Hampshire efforts to get this permit bank off and running, to use the money in a way that will benefit small coastal communities and small vessels. Sure, an analysis would be great, just as it would be great to have an analysis regarding the impact of private-operated permit banks on groundfish catch share programs. We don't have that either. A lot of analysis we don't have. So this focuses on Amendment 17, slowing it down. It doesn't impact the state of Maine, but it impacts Massachusetts and New Hampshire, I think. Now, maybe I'm missing the intent of the maker of the motion, and if I am missing the intent, then I'll apologize for my remarks. But what's the implication of this if it passes relative to Amendment 17?
Apology accepted, Dr. Pierce. The intent is for this to be a concurrent action, not embodied in the analysis for Amendment 17. I'm not trying to restrain Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and New Hampshire from moving ahead. I'm swayed and persuaded and feel strongly that we need this analysis. I do take your point that we should not just focus it on state permit banks, and I would like to amend my motion to state and private permit bank impacts, so that this analysis takes a comprehensive look at permit banks on our catch share program altogether. Does the seconder agree with the perfection? Is there objection to the perfection? Let it go. If this were to pass, how does this rank? I'll ask the committee chair. How does this rank in terms of the work we already have before the groundfish committee, the priorities the council's identified, and also remind council that on Tuesday we had a pretty decent discussion, or the beginnings of a discussion that I put off until today, to discuss the possibility of evaluating and changing or eliminating mortality closures that currently exist in the groundfish plan. So I think we need to think about all the things that we're prioritizing for groundfish, and perhaps review them with staff and make decisions on what happens when. Now, it may be that the timing of some of these issues is such that you can get some things done while you're waiting to do other things that we've prioritized, but we do need to have a full understanding of what the possible is so that our expectations are in line with that. Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was actually going to make had a question on this motion. I think the one thing that you brought up is what are the resource issues as far as staff is concerned, and I don't have the exact answer other than to say we are going to have to make some decisions as to what has priority over things that we have already prioritized. And maybe my question to the maker of this motion would play into that as well, thinking about the next motion that we have that was brought up at the committee level. I wonder how these two might meld, that motion and your motion might somehow meld together into one item, or whether you think that this needs to stay separate and might have some, you know, different demands on staff time. But there will be issues that have to be resolved, and it may be that we need to sit down with staff and try and figure them out and bring some sort of priorities back to the council.
Is the intent of this motion, it's another question, the intent to have council staff work on it, or council, science center, and regional office staff?
Or outside? I mean, we had some discussion prior to reconvening the council here about the the order of the motions here, and I wanted this on the board, clearly, so the people who have angst about the permit banks have an understanding that this is an issue that at least I intend to follow through with. And if your suggestion, Mr. Chair, is maybe we need to table it till or vote it up or down, or wait till we're about to start two or three other discussions, and they all kind of are going concurrently. Prioritize things that once we sift our way through.
I'm going to ask Tom to jump in here.
This actually, the reason I raised my hand is this kind of bears on what Terry was sort of suggesting, perhaps. And the question is related to the motion. When the motion was originally written to say state permit banks, I was thinking back here that you would want to see this in time for your vote in April, even if it was not available for the public's review during the public review period. But now that you've modified it to say state and private permit banks, it's not clear to me what sort of timeline you're looking at this for, or how you're intending to use these analyses.
I guess I was going to ask the question, I think, and I could be wrong, but the concern is the accumulation of permits and how that accumulation impacts the fishery. I was just wondering if you want to look at something beyond state and private permit banks and go to, what does it mean if people amass 30 or 40 of these permits? What impacts does that have on the fishery? But perhaps I'm expanding it beyond your intent.
A little bit. There's also the cost issues. The states all operate under an RFP process that we're bound to work with. Ted brought up a comment about the pricing. You know, we were paying some competitive prices, and because of our process, we're overpaying for some permits. I mean, it's public knowledge. I think that the impacts of these are very real, and that we should think through them and factor them into our decision-making processes as we move ahead. I mean, it's certainly not State of Maine's intention to screw up the permit processing program and compete with the private industry members. But in fact, we're doing that.
Dave.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to table this motion to a time certain, and that time certain would be after we've had the accumulation limits motion put up on the board and discussed.
Is there a second? Seconded by Doug Grout. Non-debatable. All those in favor, raise your hand. I have 12. Opposed? 2 abstentions? 1. Rip.
Well, that segues us into the next item, which had to do with the accumulation limits and fleet diversity. The committee spent quite a bit of time discussing that. And do you have any presentation for us? Okay.
Just a short presentation today. So this presentation is really just to sort of remind the council where we are on the amendment on fleet diversity and accumulation limits. And we prepared a draft scoping document that went out in the council materials to review. When the committee reviewed this document, they made a motion to do an analysis of the current state of the fishery before this proceeds. But so I'm not going to focus as much on what's exactly in the scoping document so much as just where we are at. And if the council decides to go back and go to scoping and review the document, we can review it more at that time. For the status of the amendment, just to remind the council members on the priority list for this year, we had a motion or an inclusion to prepare an amendment to consider fleet diversity and accumulation caps. That was developed over the course of last year. At the September council meeting, there was a motion that the council recommends, based on the fleet diversity report, the establishment of individual accumulation caps for the groundfish fishery and the next appropriate action. That meeting and that motion was the culmination of a lot of review and a lot of committee meetings where they reviewed a draft white paper that was prepared by the Groundfish PDT that detailed the state of diversity in the fishery to some extent and also provided a description of different accumulation caps in other fisheries and how that might proceed in this fishery. So back during the review of the white paper at the June council meeting, there was a motion that described four goals for the white paper and for future council motion or future council actions, which were to maintain inshore and offshore fleets, to the extent possible to maintain a diverse groundfish fishery, including different gear types, vessel sizes, geographic locations, and levels of participation, to maintain a balance in the geographic distribution of landings, to protect fishing communities and the infrastructure they provide, and finally, to prohibit any person from acquiring excessive access to the resource in order to prevent extraction of disproportionate economic rents from other permit holders. And to briefly summarize the white paper, because it's been a few meetings since it's come before the council, the white paper provided definitions of fleet diversity and other fleets, or it was tasked to provide these definitions. Diversity was not found to be clearly defined in other mixed fleets. And the next section was on baselines for the fishery, which described active permits in the fishery over the years, I believe, since 1996, and provided diversity indices for the fishery. The next section was on considerations for accumulation limits. And the paper described three different types of limits for accumulation caps. One was usage caps, which would define the amount that one vessel could fish. One was control limits, which would control the amount, or which would limit the amount that one permit or that one person could fish, or the amount of quota that they had access to. And the other type would be sector limits, that would cap the amount of ACE that one sector was able to use. There are ownership issues involved. With accumulation limits, we're still trying to describe ownership or to quantify ownership in the New England fishery, so that there's a lot of issues there. And then there are other types of restrictions on the control of quota that could be considered or that are used in other fisheries, and these include things like community set-asides, owner on board requirements, and various other types of controls that are explained in the white paper. And the real take-home conclusion of the white paper, which is still a draft, but the draft conclusion, is that the type of caps that are considered lead to diverse outcomes, and different types of caps and different types of control requirements are appropriate for achieving different management goals. And just as an example of that, there's a table in the paper that describes example outcomes. This is just an excerpt from it. The complete table is in the white paper. These are the problems that are related to the diversity problem category. there are other categories, but on the left-hand column you have, you would have management goals, and on the right-hand column you have different types of control limits or different types of, I guess, accumulation caps or restrictions that could be used to achieve the goals on the left. And really the point here is not, this is just an example, the point is not the specific goals in the specific table, but just to say that different things that are considered will have very different outcomes for the fishery. So the goals are important in setting those, any restrictions that would be considered. So just a very basic background on accumulation limits. Caps for these limits range from 1% to 49% in other U.S. catch share fisheries. There's only one or two fisheries that were found not to have accumulation limits, and those ones were are implementing them, I believe, as we speak. Caps that are implemented on each permit could look very different from caps that are implemented for each owner, because we can stack permits here. And caps per stock are based on overall poundage, would have different considerations in a mixed stock fishery. So it may or may not make sense to pick one number, you know, just a percentage per stock across the board. For example, it might make sense for offshore stocks to be more heavily concentrated, and they're expected to be more heavily concentrated now, and who's holding the permits for those, obviously because fewer vessels fish further offshore. And just to say a few words about the current state of concentration in the fishery. Right now, this is based on a review in only in Massachusetts of corporation officers for each entity, for each permit holder entity. It's expected to be similar in other states, but just to give the council some idea, right now the maximum PSC per permit in Massachusetts is roughly 1 to 7% of any individual stock, but the maximum PSC per owner is much higher than that for a few stocks. And just to give you an idea, we combine the top three Massachusetts permit holders. Show you for 11 of the groundfish stocks, the top three holders combined hold 10 to 20% of the PSC. For one stock in the fishery, the top three permit holders combined hold 20 to 25%. And for Georgia's Bank Winter Flounder, the top three Massachusetts permit holders right now hold 41% of the PSC for that stock. And just to point out that going forward with any analysis or any amendment that might look at these things, it's going to be extremely difficult to characterize the state of accumulation due to confidentiality concerns. We're not able to say what the maximum PSC of one permit holder is. You know, that kind of stuff isn't allowed to be released, so it's just knowing that it's going to be difficult going forward to analyze that. And also, I just wanted to point out that setting the caps at a percentile line would have, therefore, a very significant impact on a small number of permit holders, because it does appear to be there are some cases where you have a very small number holding a pretty substantial percentage of the PSC on some stocks. And just to briefly point out the questions we asked the committee about the scoping document, so they're on the council's mind, was whether the scoping document should be broad-based or whether it should identify specific topics to be considered in this amendment. Is there anything that we're already willing to rule out? Is there anything in particular, any particular actions that we know we want to include? And also what elements of fleet diversity should be included? It does seem that this is a term that has different meanings to different people, so if this is something that could be further described going forward. And finally, will defining goals assist in refining the scope of the action before this document goes out to scoping? And that's it. I'll turn it back over to Rip for the committee motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, to focus our discussion on the consolidation accumulation issue, The committee did have a motion, which I will put forth on behalf of the committee, that the council determines the degree to which the groundfish fleet has consolidated and fishing privileges have accumulated for individual permit holders under Amendment 16. The analysis would commence after 1 year of Amendment 16 implementation. Continued scoping on accumulation limits will occur after the council receives the requested report. That passed the committee 11 to nothing.
Committee motion, no second required. Discussion from the council. Jim Odlin.
Yeah, after reflecting on that motion, I'm just wondering, what are we going to compare that to? Are we comparing it just to the year previous to Amendment 16, or would we, in other words, if you're trying to analyze what 16 accomplished, it seems to me, I don't know, you have to at least have some kind of baseline to start from. I don't know where that is. And I think that's just something, you know, I'm throwing out there for a thought. I don't know how you would analyze something against nothing. You know, I suppose is it, maybe Tom can answer it. What would you do with that motion? What would you compare it to? Just previously? Just before Amendment 16 or what?
Well, we can compare it to anything you want, basically. But the better answer is that the white paper, the draft white paper, already had some information that went back to at least 1994 and then to certain years prior to 1994. We didn't have a whole time series through the 80s. The biggest problem, of course, for us is ownership. We don't yet have good ownership records that track back the permits into time. The service does have a project working on that to try and collect it, but I don't know exactly where that project is. Initially, they told us that we would have some information in November, and we still haven't seen anything yet. So I don't really know where we're at on that project.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that's a good point, Jim. And Tom and I have talked a bit about this, and I think sort of the range that's in the white paper might be the beginning of it, to look at in a holistic fashion what measures over the years, in fact, have already caused a certain level of consolidation. I think we tend to look at everything and accumulate what's happened over a number of years and blame it on Amendment 16 when you look at these numbers and you see a very different picture when it looks out over a long period of time. So,
thanks. I have a question on the motion. Is the implication of this that work is just going to stop on this issue? Because I see the possibility for a lot of different things going on at the same time. On the one hand, sure, it makes sense to look at the information at the end of the first year from the groundfish, and it certainly makes sense to have scoping after you've done that. But you're also going to want to be scoping other things, like what's the council trying to look for here? What's the goal? How does the council want to consider diversity and accumulation limits? And so there's a lot of things that can and should be discussed and decided separate from whatever comes out of this report at the end of 1 year. And in addition, I mean, clearly from the question that Jim asked, there's also a lot of things that we could start work on. In terms of the analysis, short of having that last 1 year. So I'm struggling with the motion if the intention is we're just going to stop and wait till next summer sometime before we do anything.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The intent was not to totally stop any work on this. Staff has been working on this right along. There are certain aspects of the existing white paper that may need some more fleshing out, and that is continued to be worked on. So I don't think it's the intent to stop that. I don't disagree with your thought about trying to figure out essentially what it is that we want this to do. At least in my mind, I don't want to put the words into the rest of the committee members. That's probably our biggest stumbling block by far, and it's the one that has perhaps prevented us from moving in any one direction, because there is no consensus on where we should be. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have listened to the last several motions, and they are all linked, and I was going to say something similar to what Pat said. I think that that we have a number of things going on here, and that they are all very closely interconnected. As far as this, I support this. I think we need to have this kind of information, but we need to know at some point, we need to know what we're going to do with it. And from things that have been said over the last hour or so from the audience and around the table, a number of things come to mind, and a number of cautions that we have to take into account. I think it's perfectly legitimate for us to be looking at ownership caps to avoid excessive ownership that creates market control. That, I think, is a given. I think that's something that we have a responsibility to do. But also implicit in all of the discussion is this idea of vision and determining diversity. And I'm growing, from meeting to meeting to meeting, I'm growing increasingly wary of that concept. I was always nervous with it, but now I'm getting much more wary of it. The idea of vision, fleet vision, smacks to me of basically market control. What we're doing is saying what we want the market to look like, not necessarily where it's going to wind up of its own accord. And I think we have to trust market forces to produce a fleet that's of maximum efficiency. Now, there is one good economic argument for exercising a little control there, and that is the unique situation in the fishing fleet where we have to protect infrastructure. Because below a certain point in a certain area, if we lose infrastructure, then other businesses go out of business. We have to be aware of that. I don't know to what extent that we want to exercise control. We have to look at that as we go down the line. I'm in favor of the economic analysis that was talked about before. With the permit banks, I agreed that we need to move Amendment 17 forward. That has to be a part of this whole effort. I'm concerned not just with what Ted said, but I'm concerned with the possibility not just of permits going out of sight in terms of cost, but also the possibility of permit rating. And I asked the agency representative about that specifically. What happens if an economically stronger state decides to raid permits from an economically weaker state? Rhode Island is clearly the most economically weak state in New England, and so I'm concerned with the effect on my own state. And in terms of vision, that really, I'm getting very, very wary of that, because my vision isn't going to be somebody else's. Trying to achieve a vision is taking a snapshot in time and wanting things to stay the same. My vision would be a 1950s New England fishing village with Eastern rig draggers all painted Nantucket green and some lobster boats with a few clam shacks and nice long piers. That's my vision, because that's what I grew up with. But I'm really wary of this whole concept of fleet vision. It just disturbs me because it smacks of central market control. And we've done that for a third of a century. We've micromanaged an industry, and the industry has not done well under that kind of micromanagement. I'd like to see it freed up as much as possible. All of these things are connected. Pat's quite right. We need to look at all of them, and I think this is a good place to start. I agree with this amendment. I will vote for this amendment, but I'm very wary of where people want to take this. Thank you.
Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, to the motion. When the committee debated this issue, it obviously had in front of it the draft document that you all have, document number 4 in the binder, that is the 4 or 5 pager describing what the council would like to do through scoping. And the question that came up was, well, one of the questions that came up was, all right, when do we initiate this? ASAP, right now, before the end of the fishing year, or do we wait until we have 1 year of operation under Amendment 16, and then all the analyses we hope that will be available to us through staff and through the National Marine Fisheries Service as we prepare for, you know, the future and how to follow up on Amendment 16. So the motion specific to or repeats the objectives that are listed in this particular document and then just highlights the fact that 1 year after implementation, we then move this forward. It's simple as that. We can, of course, debate the content of this particular document, and I would be willing to do that, but there really is no need yet because if this motion passes, then there'll be time for further work on this whole concept in preparation for moving forward after May 1. To Pat's particular point about does everything stop until we get to May 1, 1 year after full implementation of Amendment 16, absolutely not. A lot of great work is being done kind of behind the scenes. Maybe I'm in front of the scene and not behind the scenes, so I didn't appreciate it. But when you go to the National Marine Fisheries Service website, when you go to the Northeast Fisheries Science Center website, you see all sorts of good work that's being done right now. I can highlight the social sciences branch. I mean, they really have begun. And this council was briefed a while ago on this initiative. We're evaluating the social and economic outcomes of catch share programs in the Northeast. This all relates to these particular issues about consolidation and excessive shares. How well is catch share management working? So I assume that in the not too distant future, we'll have some additional commentary, conclusions, recommendations from this very important social sciences branch. And when you dig deeper into the website and you go to the links, you see GMRI, all the work that they are doing relative to industry responses to draft performance measures and indicators for catch share programs in New England. That's been ongoing for a while. So there's a lot there. There's a lot of information we can draw upon. And my thinking when this motion was made and when we debated it was that when we go to public hearing, the scope on these particular key questions, we should be in a position to offer up to those who come to comment some indication of what's been going on, you know, what has happened. And if we have that in hand, it should serve the industry, those who come to comment, and ourselves, should serve us well as we then figure out, you know, what we need to do to fulfill Magnuson Act obligations that are clearly stated regarding preventing excessive accumulation of privileges. And we'll certainly be in a better position to respond to some of the guidance that has recently come out of the catch share management policy of NOAA that keys in on this particular question about excessive shares, accumulation limits. So we need all information. We need as much information as we can relative to what has happened before we go and scope and spend a lot of time not being as productive as we otherwise would be, having 1 year of experience under our belt and an evaluation of what has happened. Once we know what has happened, I suspect it'll help us determine where we need to go, what we need to change. And in the meantime, I hope that we'll be able to, using the white paper, further discuss, without scoping, these issues of fleet diversity, allocation, and excessive shares. Because if we don't know what we want initially, if we don't have some idea, then, again, we do everyone a disservice when they come to comment on that which we offer up in this document that I still say is too incomplete, this scoping document, too incomplete. And frankly, if we were to act on this today and move it forward today, I would want to change the objectives because the objectives are not really objectives. They're actually action. They're actually tools to accomplish objectives. So I think the motion makes sense, and I'll continue to support it.
Captain Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I just remind folks that the catch shares policy is very explicit about, with catch shares, you have not only biological but social and economic consequences, and they recommend biological, social, and economic goals. And then once you have your goals for catch shares, then you design your program to meet those goals. Are they community goals? Are they preserving small fishermen? Are they preserving spatial balance between ports? What are your goals? And then you design your program around your goals. It's one, if you say, let's wait and let's see what happens, you'll never get back. The first thing you have to do is set clear goals and objectives, then design your program. And we just can't wait for that type of thing. And we seem to be moving into developing catch share programs and scallops and monkfish and groundfish without a clear set of goals. And we're just going to be round and round and round.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question and then a comment. The question would be, I mean, is this council trying to set a cap on fishing privileges or ownership? Is that the goal here?
That's what we're trying to figure out.
Okay.
That's the question.
Thank you.
David?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. To Paul's comment, I mean, we already set a goal in Amendment 16. It was to preserve a small boat fleet. That was one of the goals. And then with the allocation we did, we immediately set about not adhering to our own goals, in my opinion. And the reason I requested that the previous motion be tabled is I think all these issues are interrelated. They should be analyzed it all at once rather than in separate things that are going to tie up tons of staff time to essentially keep redoing it. I mean, as you heard from the audience, a lot of these issues are related to the initial allocation they received. They don't feel that they got an equitable allocation, and they're having to deal with the consequences of that. Some are related to the type of permit they held. People with a hand gear A permit. They held a permit that's a limited access permit, and they get sucked into this vortex, and they don't think they belong here. Some are related to permit banks, both private and public. They have definitely changed the marketplace, for good or bad. Depends on your view. Again, people have come to the microphone and said, I can't compete. Some are related to the leasing of quota, what I called at the committee meeting the Pac-Man effect, where people, you know, go out like the Pac-Man thought, and they start buying up quota, and the more they buy, the more they catch, the more they can go out and buy some more, and they just keep gobbling up the fish. So, you know, this is related to the leasing of quota, and that's an issue that we need to analyze. But my feeling is that none of these can be analyzed until we've gone a year in the program, because we don't know what it is that actually has occurred until one full year is up. You know, I mean, Aaron came to the microphone and said, well, this area is down 50% and that area is down 45%, but that's only 6 months of data. You know, those numbers are going to change. They may go up, they may go down. I'm not sure. I got a suspicion where they're going, but I won't know until after May. So I think, you know, we can continue to work on this while we wait the year out. But, you know, any analysis that's done in the meantime, we try to do it on an interim basis. I don't think we're going to get a full picture. One thing I noticed and will note with the information that Annie put up on the board there, because I was looking at Annie and I had my glasses on, when she put that information up, every eyebrow behind her went up. You know, you got the raised eyebrow look. So clearly, you got people's attention with what people already own. Now, some of them were probably thinking, geez, I got to get on the stick. I don't own enough yet. And others are going, oh, my God, isn't that awful? So that's why I don't think we can go to scoping yet until we've got some information to bring to scoping so that people have something to comment on. And, I have no problem with working on a detailed list of goals and objectives for that scoping document so that when we ask people a question, we can get an answer. You know, if we don't have the questions out there to ask, all we're going to get is a lot of opinion. We're going to get, I think people own too much, I don't think people own enough, whatever it is. So we need to develop the questions so that we can get the responses that will help us to decide what to do next.
Rep.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I concur with all of those who have indicated that all of what we've been discussing here, these various things, are interrelated. And because of that, I would like to make an amendment to the motion. In the first sentence, after Amendment 16, add in to include the social and economic impacts of permit banks, period. You get a second on.
There's a second, seconded by Jim Odlin. Go ahead, Rip.
Thank you. My rationale here is that we've got this other motion sitting that was tabled until we had this discussion. I think they are interrelated issues. I think a lot of the same analysis will be done, and my feeling is why do them separately? Let's include it all into this one document. And it's also to Pat's concern about staff, this certainly some parts of this can get started on. We can do some of the initial work on this right away.
I support the motion, but then I think what the committee needs to do is to go forward with work on goals, objectives, and definitions, for instance. To me, what's an owner-operator? There's a company that in Maine that's been in business 100 years that owns and operated rates boats, an owner-operator, or another company that's been in business 40 years. That owns and literally operates the boats, and they may hire the captains, but I don't think there's anything wrong. Some people just don't want to own. They want to be an employee of a solid company that gives them a year's pay year in and year out, and they have great employees, and they create something. So we're so far away from even our definitions that we need to back up to that, you know, so the committee can be doing the work on that type of thing. And I mean, just while I got the mic, I want to say something about a vision. You know, that scares me as it does Dave, because I have been in this business a long time. And I don't think anybody can look forward and say what a fleet composition could look like. And even if you did, other things happen. And for instance, I can see a vision that you could actually bankrupt people by having them plugged into a hole. Things change. Economics are going to dictate what the fleet looks like, whether we like it or not. You know, it just will. If the guy in a small port in a 45-foot boat, you plug him in there, he can't leave, and the fish don't swim by for a couple of years, you bankrupt him. You just bankrupt him. If you let him have some flexibility and float away for a while, he'll come back. You know, we've seen that time and time again. So I just, It's a huge thing. And then one more issue is that as we do this analysis and data, I think we need to be extreme in what Annie pointed out about ownership. All that ownership that happened before cat shares. So a lot of people are blaming cat shares for things that shouldn't be blamed on cat shares. And I want to be very careful that as we develop this, we have a distinct break on what cat shares did and didn't do. And that ownership that happened well below in Amendment 5 and Amendment 7 and Amendment 13 that we were encouraging consolidation isn't lumped into or blamed on cat shares. So there's plenty of work for the committee to be doing, and we're a long way, I believe, from a scoping document that will really get us any place where we want to go. Thank you.
Thanks. I'm fully aware that a lot of analyses are going on, both in our offices, the Science Center, and the council. And I don't think I've heard anybody suggest that we should be going to scoping now. There are some huge policy issues here, and I think the policy questions are going to take a lot more than the analyses. That's sort of secondary to the work that council's got to do on the policy issues. If I use the word vision, I didn't mean to. But I think the council has to tackle this issue of, if nothing else, what don't you want to happen in the fishery, and give some reason why we're doing all these analyses and looking at this information. So I think that work's going to take longer than I'm concerned that the motion doesn't address that. The motion addresses sort of these other issues, the analyses, the scoping, and doesn't deal with this bigger issue. And so what I'm looking to hear is that the council is going to continue their work on the policy issues, the bigger issues, and fine, we pass this motion that sort of follows from that.
Dr. Pierce.
Pat's quite correct. Although I think the council has already said, and that's this motion flows from what we have already said, the position we've already taken, that we are going to impose limits on the amounts of allocation that individuals or groups of individuals may control. We are going to create other incentives for maintaining diversity in fishery infrastructure. I mean, those sorts of points. Positions are made known in the scoping document that we're now proposing to hold back on because we're just not ready to go with it. At least that's the view of the maker of the motion and certainly some around the table. The council has taken quite a few opportunities to, I guess, generalize, to create a direction in which we are going to go. For example, back at the beginning of 2010, we actually made some very important decisions. A motion was made January 28, 2010, to do something along the lines of dealing with excessive privileges and consolidation in the context of sector management, where we said that we would address potential problems of the incidental allocative effects of the sector program as well as individual permit holders acquiring excessive control of fishing privileges. We said that we would address the issue of sector ACEs as they relate to the FMP's social and economic objectives. We said that we would do that in the context of our sector management plan policy, in the context of our national policy on catch share management, and the requirements of the national standard number 4. And then in a Federal Register that was published with a final rule for Amendment 16, the National Marine Fisheries Service did the obvious and the appropriate, which was to say very clearly that it pledges. I used this word at the committee meeting, and Sue Murphy caught me on that, and she said it was an interesting way to word it. But anyways, it says very specifically the service has pledged in its letter to the council announcing partial approval Amendment 16 to work with us to deal with all these issues. So it's a partnership, obviously. Federal government, state governments, this council, working to address these specific issues that we say need to be addressed. More work needs to be done on it to flesh it out and to provide specifics. But this then needs to be done to assist us to move forward to accomplish those specific tasks that we've already agreed to do going all the way back to the beginning of 2010. This is critical information to know where we are right now and then to compare that to where we feel we need to be. We haven't yet determined that. And therein lies our thorny challenge. When will we make those determinations? Hopefully sometime before the middle of this year. So I still believe the motion is quite appropriate, and I believe that RIP's add-ons also make sense.
We'll go to the audience now. Anyone wishing to comment from the audience? Ron?
Ron Smolowitz, speaking as somebody that's observed this process for 40 years since its inception. It seems to me the motion that's on the board is actually something the agency should be doing continuously. I don't see why the council needs to make a motion of this nature. This, to me, is what the agency should be doing as its day-to-day task, evaluating the management that's underway and looking at the consequences. I read the scoping document, and actually I would urge the council to get out a scoping document as soon as possible. You know, the industry has changed. The audience has changed. There's a lot of organizations out there, ENGOs, sector organizations, industry organizations. They all have ideas. They all have concepts of policy. And I think the council will be well served to go out and ask these organizations, both the industry and the NGO, for developed concepts of policies and measures that could move this groundfish multi-species and all, because all the other fisheries are related to this fishery. It's not developing a vision. I mean, we saw what the vision statement in Amendment 11 did. It didn't do anything. But you need some involvement of all the stakeholders in helping you decide and offer up suggestions on major policies to achieve the objectives that you have in this scoping document. I don't see a problem with this scoping document. I feel I could go and develop some new concepts on things that I've been bringing up to the council for over 20 years, separating inshore vessel management from offshore vessel management. This doesn't preclude that, but it would be very helpful for me to develop a sort of a detailed document defining what my concepts are, as opposed to just saying, this is no good, or this should be this way, or something to that effect. So I would urge the council, whether this gets voted up or down doesn't matter. I think the agency should be doing this. And I would urge you to go out to the public and ask them for some general guidance on how to move forward from where we are. They want to contribute. They want to partner up with you. But you guys could end up spending a year discussing all this stuff without getting any outside input. That's not constructive. Go out and ask what people think about what's going on. It's a very rapidly changing situation, and studying what has occurred isn't going to help you very much, because it's going to be totally changed picture in another 6 months. So I just urge you to get out there with scoping and get some information from the public.
Jim?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Kendall, New Bedford Seafood Consulting. I'm going to reiterate a lot of what Ron said, I guess, or pretty much along the same line. But I'd like to put it in a context that puts a little more feeling or a little more emphasis on what the costs are. This is something akin to getting into a battle or a war and not looking at the results for a year. You don't want to take a body count until a year's gone by, and then you'll have a definitive answer. Yeah, we did pretty good. No, we didn't do too well. Rather than doing analysis as you're going along day to day, as we're getting our ass kicked, we're losing too many people, it's not worth what we're going through. There's a lot of people that will tell you that. In a year's time, they won't be around to be able to explain what happened to them or why it happened to them, and it'll be too damn late. You're not going to squeeze the toothpaste out of this tube and then try and pack it back in after a year and say that, you know, maybe we should have done this a bit differently. Ron's exactly right when he says that this should have been an ongoing body count. And that's the best way I can describe it, because some of the people who are doing relatively well, basically a third of the fleets, are surviving and doing fairly well, I guess. Everything I've heard, and it's because I've heard it, it's not because it's been reported or analyzed to any true effect that I understand, is that two-thirds of the fleet are out of the fishery, and some of those people are surviving based on what they can earn through their leasing. I mentioned this the other night at the mayor's meeting. No one has taken into account the crew members who don't share in some of that relief. Now, Massachusetts has unemployment for a lot of the people that are fishing. Most of the other states don't. And even those in Massachusetts, which you're collecting for a year, you're not going to get by on. So in a year, you'll know the results, but I don't see where you're going to be able to do anything about it. When Massachusetts, New Bedford, and Gloucester approached the Secretary of Commerce for some relief, he gave answers saying that those emergency conditions did not exist. If this analysis had been going on and been available and given to him, if it is available, we might have had a different answer and a different result come down the line. I don't see... It's not a bad thing to get. It's not a bad thing to have. Pass the motion, it'll make you feel better and say we've done something. But once again, the body count is already out there. You should have known what the results were going to be. Not only with fishermen, but the infrastructure for this fishery has been devastated. You've got ports that don't even resemble ports any longer. You know, I just don't know why it's taken so long to come to an understanding that we need to know what we've done. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brett Tolley, Northwest Atlantic Marine Alliance. I just wanted to take a minute and just read on behalf of some fishermen who wanted to be here today, but they couldn't. They really care about this issue. They care about fleet diversity. They care about consolidation. And I will be submitting on behalf of them their formal letters to the council, but just wanted to not read the entire letters, but just a few excerpts. I think it would be worthwhile to have these voices heard and help at least identify part of what the problem is looking like. So this first excerpt comes from Jay Driscoll. Jay's the president of the New Hampshire Sectors. He's been a 20-year ground fisherman out of New Hampshire. Jay says, the repercussions of the extreme consolidation we are seeing both in the buying and leasing market is having a domino effect on our fishermen and their families, as well as the small harbors and communities they serve, indeed on the entire footprint of New Hampshire. To the council, ask yourselves, what kind of fishery would you like to see for the future? If it includes boats from the state of New Hampshire, then I recommend you address this problem immediately. The council has prioritized an amendment to address fleet diversity. I urge you to continue this work and not delay another moment. That's from Jay. This next excerpt is from B.G. Brown, who fishes out of Gloucester. He's a second-generation fisherman. He's fished on 30- to 70-foot boats for over 25 years. In the last 5 years, he's fished his own 31-foot gillnetter and longliner. B.G. says, I love what I do, and I have had several opportunities to buy more quota, but have been outbid by larger capacity boat owners. I'm watching as the bigger boats buy up the smaller boats' catch shares. I have tried to play the market as best I can to maximize my prices, which means going out in weather that other guys may not. I have even leased more fish at these crazy high prices, basically working for change, just to keep working. My stock is about 20% of what it usually is this time of year, so investing $200,000 for another permit with better history is not realistic. I am very happy to see that prioritizing fleet diversity has made it on the council agenda. I don't have all the answers that would keep our small boat, single permit holder fleet alive. I hope that together we can come up with the solutions that will enable small-scale fishing operations to survive. And then this last one comes from Billy Chapralis, a 40-year commercial fisherman out of Massachusetts. This is just an excerpt again. Billy says, I fish using hook gear, which has the lowest impact to the environment, and fishermen like me and coastal communities throughout New England are getting squeezed out of the fishery. Uncontrolled consolidation will lead to a fleet with no diversity and will also remove the most sustainable fishermen. Let's not push out all the small-scale fishermen because it's already putting a big economic impact on these coastal communities. And what about the national priorities for creating green jobs? This system is pushing out the most green jobs that we have in the fisheries. Consolidation is a problem, and the council needs to explore ways to protect fleet diversity. One concern I have is that if the council moves too slow, the consolidation will happen at even a faster rate, and we won't be able to go back.
I recommend some sort of freeze to be placed to protect the fleet diversity we currently have until measures are put in place. I want to say thanks for letting me read those. And just one quick last comment to the vision idea. I think whether we call it a vision or whether we call it goals or objectives, the point is that there needs to be a long-term idea of where we're heading. And I think, you know, to start off, there are goals and objectives in Amendment 16. Objective number 7 reads, maintain a diverse ground fishery, including different gear types, vessel sizes, geographic locations, and levels of participation. I think that's a great place to start. Thanks.
Tina?
Tina Jackson, American Alliance of Fishermen and their communities. I think the concerns of a lot of the fishermen obviously are valid. And the council might I might suggest to the council that when a cap is finally implemented to comply with National Standard 4, I suggest that any individual who owns more than the cap percentage must divest within 1 year after the implementation of such that cap. That may curb any influence of possibly buying up a bunch of permits so that one individual owner, you know, holds all. With the exception of one particular sector in New Bedford, whereas the individual owned all of his permits prior to the implementation of Amendment 16 and therefore should be grandfathered in, particularly because he owned all of his permits prior to the implementation of Amendment 16. And where every other individual accumulated permits after Amendment 16 was implemented and profited and benefited from the loss of other permit holders, as was done in the Alaska pollock fishery, whereas it was based on foreign investors, but that type of language could prevent and help the council to possibly take a little heat off of the consolidation factor and you know, the vast ownership questions that are at hand. So that's about it.
Thank you. Dick?
Hi, Richard Allen, fisheryconsulting.com. I just had a suggestion on your analysis that you go back over a sufficient time frame to really get an idea of what has happened to the groundfish fishery, kind of in modern history, I'd call it. So I'd suggest something like 1965. As a beginning point. I'm troubled by all these analyses that show what happened in the last 5 years or the last 10 years, because most of what happened that causes what we've been working on happened in 1965 to 1975, 1980 really. That's what really set the stage for what we're doing now. So if you don't have a good understanding of what happened in that period, it's really hard to figure out where things should be now or what you should be trying to do. So I'd suggest that there's probably data available going back to 1965. Eric Thunberg at the center has done a lot of work on looking at those things. So that's one thing. The other is a couple of technical points. It seems to me, I don't know if it's in the white paper or not, but I haven't heard it discussed, that the problem of PSCs being tied to a permit as a bundle will really complicate the problem of setting accumulation limits and how people will adjust their holding to meet any accumulation limits. I just don't really see how that's going to work out, how people will be able to do that depending on how you structure the accumulation limit. So it seems like you ought to be able to address that, because people will just kind of ignore that and say, well, this is the way it ought to be and these are the accumulation limits. But then when they come to trying to figure out, well, how do you adjust to meet those? And you've got this fact that you have to sell a hold permit and all of its PSC attached to it. It becomes pretty difficult. The other question I had is whether you really ought to consider a control date, say adopting a control date today that tells people that you're going to look at this and that investments that they make or changes that happen after this date may or may not be recognized. The typical control date language, just so you don't really give people the idea that, well, we better go out and position ourselves now before they do something. So, thanks.
Thank you, Dick. Rob?
Yeah, Rob Aldlin, Scarborough, Maine. You guys are discussing fleet diversity, and I heard some of the council members mention infrastructure. Currently, the infrastructure in the Portland, Maine area is in a current state of failure. I have to travel to New Bedford to get nets repaired or nets built. We've got one fuel dock left. We got one ice plant left. We got one place to sell, and often there isn't enough fish to have an auction. My question, and I don't know if this is appropriate to have question and answers, and I'm just going to make the statement, is can we go back to having baseline criteria? Before Amendment 16, we were using days at sea, and there was basically a price structure for vessels of a certain length and horsepower. And if we could go back to that, even if it stays with a quota system, that my 44-foot boat could lease from vessels in my size class, the price would come back to an affordable level. My business plan back in 2005 when I bought my one boat, one permit that only I operate, was to be able to fish my allocation, which used to be an 88-day permit, and this year was a 24-day permit. It was with the intention of leasing in the current leasing days. Now I'm looking to lease quota, but completely priced out of the market by others. We keep mentioning that, you know, we're only halfway through the fishing year. We got 93 days till May 1st. That's a lot more than halfway through the fishing year. We got the worst weather of the winter coming up February, historically the windiest, stormiest month of the year. Big boats will go, and that's great. That's always been the way it is. The larger boats can benefit from the size of their vessel, can fish the hard weather, catch the market, and make a lot of money for February, for March, for Lent. But there's going to be a lot of fish left on the table uncaught that could have gone to boats. You know, I started out fishing, we could only keep this year in May. We could only keep 1,000 of pollock. We had to throw back the rest and shift off to try to catch other species. A magical occurrence heard in Secretary Locke influenced something, and next thing you know, the pollock increased 600%. So now pollock was no longer an issue. Go catch as much as you could. Well, this year we had a lot of cod and hake mixed in with the pollock. And the common pool, we caught up our measly 50 ton of hake and 200 ton of cod in pretty short time. And now we're only allowed to keep 100 pounds of cod and hake. That really doesn't make common pool viable as a business, you know, for throughout the year. I think, like I said, 90 days left. I'm planning on trying to fish in April when the weather gets a little bit better. I got about 15 days left to burn on my permit, 2-to-1 counting. I'll be out seven days of fishing. Hopefully, I'll be able to lease some more if there's any available. But the fleet diversity was in place when you had
baseline criteria. And again, I don't know if it's the right appropriate place to ask questions of this council. Can I just ask you, sir, is it okay to ask you questions? Can we go back to having baseline criteria?
I mean, the committee can develop whatever measures it wants to recommend to the council, so sure.
Okay. I'd love to see that somehow addressed at some point in you guys' future. I know you guys have a lot of fish to take care of, and I commend you for your efforts. But if you truly want to have fleet diversity, this is a great mechanism. Now, I know people have invested a bunch of money in buying up other permits. Well, I invested money thinking I was going to fish 88 days a year, and I don't have that ability anymore. So I don't really feel bad for someone who bought a permit for $200,000 that may now be worth $700,000. And if they can't lease it to themselves, they're going to have to lease it back to vessels of that size class. That would really create fleet diversity. And if you really, truly believe that that's what you want, to see a future of diverse boats. I don't know if diverse boats or fleet diversity is even the way to go. Let's just keep as many people fishing and have jobs as we have now or we had before. The gentleman who spoke before me said a third of the boats are doing great. Some of the boats are doing better than anybody can imagine. The huge stocks. And a lot of guys are sitting on their hands. Crew members, they're not even mentioned. They don't go to meetings. They, you know, a vessel owner, yeah, it's your prerogative to come to the meeting and speak up. I guess if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman, if you do remember, when was the relaxing of baseline criteria put forth on the table? Is that something you maybe have a recollection of? I only see that benefiting the most well-funded of operations.
I'll ask the staff, Tom Neese, if you could answer that.
So there's really, I mean, to be clear on what the issue is, the council has never gotten rid of the baseline requirements and upgrades, as Mr. Preble mentioned yesterday. Leasing outside of sectors in the common pool is still restricted by the baseline requirements. The issue is that within a sector, the ACE can flow between any size vessel. But you have to realize that the sector construct is that the individual permit doesn't hold the ACE. The ACE is held by the sector. So what is happening is the ACE is being managed by the sector. That's how we look at it, because it's not an ITQ. If it was an ITQ, what he's suggesting would be relatively simple to do. You would, I mean, whether it would be right or not, it would be relatively easy to do, because you would say that you could limit how much could be traded between permits of different sizes. The committee at one point during the development of Amendment 16, there was a couple people who came to the mic and suggested that ACE should not be allowed to be traded between permits of different sizes. And there were a lot of reasons why it didn't pursue it. One is it wasn't an ITQ, it was a sector. The other is that would have meant essentially that the council was getting into how the sector managed its catch internally. And we would have had to create a reporting system for that, which we didn't have. And there was a resistance to do that, to get in and micromanage the activities within the sector.
Apparently, that's the best answer I can get. I didn't get a time frame, but my next question would be to approach the council or NIMS and ask them, is there a way to implement a limit on even in inter-sector transfer and go back to having a baseline criteria?
Yeah, and it's the same answer I gave you before. If the council wants to get into that, it can certainly create those regulations.
So I'd have to approach a council member and ask them to possibly, on my behalf, make an amendment?
Right.
And or make a motion?
Right, and whatever action would be appropriate. You know, typically the way these things happen is either at the committee level, the motion's made and if it's passed, the committee brings it to the council and they begin to develop the measures, how they operate. Sometimes these motions do come from the council table to direct the committee to develop alternatives to accomplish a goal.
Okay. Yeah, not real familiar with the council process. My first trip to one of your meetings. Some of you may remember my dad's served some time on the council in the past, and my brothers, and perhaps you'll see me here one day. Thanks.
Thanks, Rob. Harriet?
Harriet Diedrichson. I come from New Bedford, and I own one scallop vessel and one permit. I want to have some clarification, and then I have a comment or two. The young lady that was speaking at the beginning, I don't know, probably from the, I don't know if it's council staff or agency, she mentioned something about what you could track on permits. The ownership of permits. Maybe I misunderstood. If with a permit on a boat, that boat gets its permit number and you always keep it like a Social Security number, and you get your federal ID number and you always keep that number. Am I correct there? Are we in agreement there?
Jimmy?
Well, I think the service should answer that, but I mean, I know the answer. The permit number doesn't stay the same. There's an MRI number, Tom, that tracks permits. So permit numbers change when you sell them to another boat.
Okay. Well, I never sold my permits to another boat, and so I know the permit that I got in my boat in 1968, that permit was with me all the years, and the permit number I have now stays the same permit. But here's what I see as a problem with everything you're talking about here, and I understood from the young lady, she said, there's a problem tracking these permits when they're moving. If there's a problem tracking permits when they're moving, how can you have any baseline? And I've been at meetings before, too, PDT meetings for scallops, when there's been questions about the baseline and things that you have in your computers or however you want to say it. And they say, well, I don't know if we have that in our model. To me, and now I go to meetings listening to the thing with what's going on with multi-species, and I hear people say they bought permits, and they asked the agency to tell them the history on that permit, and they bought the permit, then they bought the permit, and the person sold the permit and put the value on the permit according to what the agency said that permit had. And then when they went in to put the permit to register the permit under their name after they bought it, there was a different baseline of catch or allocation or whatever words you want to use for that permit. If all these numbers, as you've moved permits, cannot be cross-referenced from day one according to their allocations and what their history over the years, how can you do anything? How can you move forward with anything?
Just to clarify, the problem isn't necessarily with tracking permits as they move. It's that there isn't now a unified database of permit ownership, and so it's more a question of if one individual owns multiple permits or is on a corporate board that owns permits or something like that, that we're not currently able to compare that and figure out how much each individual has access to. There is an effort going on at the regional office to make that database available now. We're hoping to have it soon. Once we have that and see who the owners are and who the corporate owners are of each permit, then we can more easily look back and see where the permits have gone.
So you're saying it's the corporate ownership or the getting into their corporations, that's your problem? Or you don't have all this information? Or, I mean, this is, I know with scalloping, you're supposed to say if you own in any permit, and then I understand if you own in any permit, that's counted as one. Gene could clarify that, but that's what I understand. But when you come to corporations, of course, you come to the corporate world, and I don't know right here what people can do or what the really what the agency can do. That's on TV every day, what can be done with that. And you don't have, I don't think, the rules of attribution in your paperwork as of yet, and I think that was written in some paperwork that come out of a scallop that those rules did not apply. So there's the rub on what can really happen. But what I'm saying is, and now when you say they move these permits, I don't even know what that MRI means. What does that word mean, sir, that was just answered that?
Okay. This is all very complicated. The MRI stands for Moratorium Rights ID, or Right ID, and that is what tracks the history, the landings history of a vessel. So it is separate from the permit number. But the issue that Annie raised does have to do with being able to see through corporate or partnership ownership into who the actual individuals are that have ownership of these vessels. We collect that information in the scallop fishery. We don't yet collect it in all the other fisheries.
Right. You collect it voluntarily, and then when it comes to corporations, there's all kinds of ways to do that, too. So all of it is gray area when we're really going to be truthful right down to the letter. But then you're telling me with the multi-species, this moratorium you're using, you're going by the federal ID number of the vessel, and you track the vessel, what the vessel has caught over the period since you put the moratorium. Is that what you're saying? What number do you use?
We have two different sets of numbers. One of them is the permit number, which you're right, stays with the vessel for the life of the vessel for the most part, except for very small vessels that we don't need to get into.
Thank you.
But then we have the moratorium right ID, and the MRI exists because you can, when you sell a vessel, either retain the history of that vessel or have it be sold with the boat. And so that tracks whether that history stayed with the boat or went to another permit.
That I thoroughly understand.
Okay. So then I don't understand your question.
Well, what I'm saying is that if all these things were done as carefully and meticulously as they have to be done with what you've allowed here, I don't think the problem should be coming up that I hear at meetings, because basically now we're talking three numbers. We're talking the vessel ID number, we're talking this new MRI number, which is basically keeping track of if they retain their boat and retain their permit rights, or if they passed, or if they sold their boat and just retain their permit rights. I understand that. So now we got that, and then we've got the permit. So you've got a lot of information that you have to cross reference here, and if all that were being done properly and everybody understood, it bothers me that I see people at meetings. Well, it bothers me that the leasing ever took place in the multi-species, because there's where your problems actually started with everything that I hear being said here today. Once you started that, you opened it. But with these people who say they've bought things, and then after they go in and things aren't the way that they were told, and they get papers from the agency saying what it was and then telling them it's different, I see there must be some problems in database. There's got to be something wrong. I mean, you got a lot going on here. I don't know how that all. I don't know how these things have happened if everything is down to the letter. You'd need a lot of cross-references. There's the replacements, there's the upgrades of vessels, there's a lot of things here. But I hear what you're saying, and I'll be looking and asking more questions about that. I also want to just make the comment that when you started the leasing, there's where your problems have there's where the problem has gotten its foundation to what it has reached today. And I also want to say that I do remember his father on the council. He was there when I first went to my first council meeting in 85 in Southport, Maine. Odlin Sr., I guess we would call him, We need more fishermen at the microphone, like the man who just spoke, because he's interpreting, I think, the majority of the sentiment that's out there in fishing. These are the people that are fishing. These are the people that are trying to make their living fishing. And it is jobs. You all should be tracking jobs. I think you should be tracking these things at least on a monthly basis. That's the social part. A lot of things have to be done and should have been realized before you ever went into a system like this. I also see you're using the word catch shares, and then you're comparing, you're saying that the surf clam fishery, let's use that. You're calling that a catch share system now. We know it's an ITQ system. So you're using the word catch shares and ITQs as a synonym when you're talking. And then you're changing and you're saying the sector system is something else. I think just the use of the word catch shares as a synonym with ITQs and then talking about your sector shows again how astray the process here is gone, and how betraying it is out to the fishing community. And the last speaker is a very good example. Thank you.
Okay, let's bring it back to the council, to the motion on the board. The motion to amend. Anything further from the council? Jim?
Yeah. While this was going on, I got to thinking that wouldn't we have to try to do some kind of analysis of, once we get this, of what would have happened if we didn't have sectors? In other words, if we still maintained a days at sea system and everybody had 20 days and we had 100-pound trip limits? I mean, I think what's happened, you know, what I'm seeing in the world is that trying to compare apples and oranges, past and present, and you can't. You have to compare present with present and the other option. So I don't know how to do that, but I don't think it needs to change the motion, but I think it's something we probably have to flesh out at some point. Thank you.
I think we have some of that analysis in Amendment 16. So I don't know if you mean also including current market conditions and things like that, but at least some of that's already laid out.
Okay, anything further on the motion to amend? Sally?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I voted for the original committee motion that was underlying this last week or a week before, feeling like a lot of people have said, including Dr. Pierce, that the scoping document isn't ready for consideration. It's too general. It is pretty general. But listening to some of the comments here today and, you know, feeling the urgency to keep this thing going, I'm inclined to, number one, support the continued analysis, but to get the scoping going sooner rather than later. Because I do agree with some of the comments that if the council delays and, you know, on the timeline that's pretty much set out in that motion, doesn't start scoping until at the earliest, maybe September or October, then things will continue to change. So can this motion be amended, Mr. Chairman?
I'd prefer not to go past one amendment.
Okay.
On the motion. This is a motion to amend already.
I mean, my interest is in supporting the analysis, but having the scoping begin sooner, perhaps after one more committee meeting, and then council meets in April, and then scoping starts then. Or even sooner, quite frankly, and just going with the scoping document that's been presented here and getting scoping started in the early spring. So with your desire not to have further amendments, I'm not sure how to vote on this because there are two different things there. There's the analysis and then there's when does scoping start. So I'm feeling a little bit stuck.
I think what you would do is wait until this becomes the main motion or the main motion as amended, and then you could make your play. Anything further on the main motion as amended? I'm sorry, on the motion to amend? You ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous. And now we're on the main motion as amended. Sally?
One more question for clarification. There was a lot of discussion about how far back the analysis would go. The motion is pretty clear in that it's just looking at 1 year and how the fishery has changed under Amendment 16. I heard the original maker of the motion and the seconder say that they wanted to have the analysis look at a longer time frame, so it was clear what the context is for change in the fishery in the last year, but looking at it in previous years as well. What's the intent of the maker?
That it be a long time period, and there's already information back to 1994 in the document, in the white paper.
Okay.
This was to look at what has happened in this past year as part of the white paper, not the extent of the white paper.
Okay, thank you. With that, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, I would then offer a motion to split the motion that's on the board. After the next sentence, Karen. There we go. So the analysis and when the scoping begins is split, would be split.
Is there a second to splitting? Doug Grout?
I'll second it for the purposes of discussion.
All right, so I believe that the first part of the split motion is the motion minus the last sentence, which references the scoping starting a year after. Is that right, Sally? I have trouble seeing the board with this poll here.
The split is correct the way it's on the board right now. So everything that refers to the analysis of Amendment 16 is in the first half, and then when scoping starts is in the second half.
Discussion? You ready for the question on voting whether we're splitting the question? All those in favor, raise your hand.
Five.
Opposed. Nine. Abstentions. One. Motion fails. 5-9. One abstention. We're back on the main motion. Frank?
Thanks. I moved down just because I had the same problem you do with the poll. I just have a question. There's a lot of people, an awful lot of people, we won't know we're done, but prior to Amendment 16 going into place, there were people that knew what was going to come down the pike, and they positioned themselves to be in a better position when Amendment 16 took place. So are we going to grandfather those people in? And this is only what took place after the implementation? Or somebody who had the foresight a year or two earlier to say, I know what's coming. I think we're going to be very, very careful here when we say what we're looking at. Because if I knew a year in advance what was going on and I was able to do something, I would say, I'm okay here no matter what comes out of there. So I think everybody has to really, I think Jimmy said it earlier, what are we looking at?
Anyone want to address Frank's question? Pat?
Well, that's exactly what the committee needs to be talking about. So, yeah, that discussion needs to happen soon, sooner rather than later. And I guess as long as I have the mic, I would add that I was going to raise the issue that Dick Allen raised, too, about the control date the council may want to consider establishing either at this meeting or soon. A control date. You've already put out the word that you're talking about accumulation limits, and people are already positioning themselves. So you know, the sooner you officially make that official, probably the better.
To the motion on the board, Dr. Pierce.
I think Frank's concern is very valid, but it's independent of the motion. This is an analysis. After we get the analysis, then it's a question of what we do with it and how do we then alter the direction in which we wish to go, meaning what do we set for ourselves as objectives. With regard to the point that Pat just made, I'd like to quickly reflect on the statement made by Mr. Rodlin when he got to the mic and by Tom Neese's response. And specifically, I think I'm interpreting this correct, and I've always believed this to be true, that with the motion passing, assuming it does, and with the analyses being done, going out to scoping, we are not going to be able to take any steps to deal with consolidation or fleet diversity as long as sector management is in place. Because they're not ITQs, according to some people. They're not ITQs. Therefore, we cannot deal with restrictions on how sectors lease fish between themselves, between vessels, big boat to small boat. That's all out of our control. It's part of sector management. So my point is, once we move this forward, I would appreciate some discussion as to whether or not sector management stops us from dealing with fleet consolidation and fleet diversity issues. And if it does, what do we have to do? Do we have to amend the plan so that all of the language relative to sector management is changed, enabling us to get involved in that within sector movement of fish between big boat and small boat, one fisherman to the next? Or do we say, we're not going there. We have to go to ITQs. I'm wrestling with this problem because this is a big, big concern, fleet consolidation, fleet diversity issues, and I think that we're stymied right now, and we may be unable to deal with it because of what we have done through Amendment 16 and the power we have given to individual sectors.
So. I think there's a couple issues, Dave. Number one, the two main categories of discussion have been individual ownership, right? And the second issue is whether or not we install throttles on the flow of quota through leasing, whether we want to have the ability to regulate the flow of leasing of quota from sector to sector. And you're right, it would any decision we make after we receive analysis and go through scoping and have thorough debate and everything else would require an amendment to the plan, I believe. We don't have the analysis. We haven't laid out the goals or objectives. You know, we may end up with just individual, working on individual issues, or we may say we're not concerned with the individual, we're concerned with the flow or some mix. Too early to say because we haven't even defined, and that's what the committee needs to do. We haven't defined what the the goal is, the principal issues that we're working on. We know there's two general areas, the accumulation and whether or not we cap that, and then also the ability of fish to move from sector to sector.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, that following up on your point, it means that we're going to have to decide as a council to suddenly change our course of action and tinker with, put some kind of control on how a sector operates, far more than what we have right now for control. And if we decide not to do that, then the big step would be to go to ITQs, referendum issues, all of that. Okay, so this is a this indeed is a big ticket issue, and I suspect that because of the council's hands-off approach on sector management, that it's going to be very difficult for us to deal with consolidation issues.
Yeah, just to clarify, I don't think Tom was saying that sectors somehow prevents caps on individual persons having accumulation limits. Those are not connected. You can go ahead and set up accumulation limits on individuals without changing the sector program. It just means that individual owners that bring their vessel or vessels to a sector are now limited to how much they can bring, because they can, if they're butting up against an accumulation limit.
Anything further on the motion? As amended? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Fourteen. Opposed? Abstentions? One abstention. Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was all that I had in terms of committee motions to bring to the council. There was one item that was left over from day one. I believe it was from Jim Odlin. It had to do with mortality, dealing with mortality closures. And Jim's not here.
Dave Preble. Okay, so this had come up on Tuesday, and I asked that we postpone it or hold it over until this agenda item. So we're going to need a second. Dave, probably you made this motion, right? Do we have a second? Seconded by David Gaethel. Right. Do we have a second before we debate the motion? Seconded by Terry. Dave Gaethel?
Yeah, we had a motion tabled to a time certain after Terry's motion. I think that has to come up next.
Yes, we did. If there's no objection, Karen, can you put this motion aside and go back to the previously tabled motion?
Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion to put this back on the table.
Seconded by Terry. Now we'll vote on whether or not we put this back up. All those in favor, raise your hand. Count 13, opposed. Abstentions. You abstain?
13.
Okay. Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems to me that we've already dealt with this issue with what was added into the other one. I know that you were interested in private all permit banks, and my amendment was in just use the word permit bank, so it was intended to cover the whole thing. If you're satisfied with that, then I would have another motion.
I mean, I'd like to withdraw the motion.
I think the proper thing at this point is just to table it, period. I would so move. I'm making a motion to table it permanently.
Is there a second? Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Gaethel. All those in favor, raise your hand. Count 14, motion's tabled permanently. That's it, we're breaking for lunch.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Dr. Pierce, are you offering to pay for lunch?
Well, no, I need to know your intent regarding groundfish. Are we continuing our discussion on groundfish after lunch?
Yeah, I'm going to bring up the mortality discussion after lunch.
Okay.
You will stand here, John?
Yeah.
1 o'clock?
Be back in 1 hour.